14:46, and they laid their hands on him and took him. And one of them stood by and drew a sword and smote a servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. And Jesus answered and said unto them, Are ye come out as against a thief with swords and with staves to take me? I was daily with you in the temple, teaching, and you took me not. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. And they all forsook him and fled. And there followed him a certain young man, having a linen cloth cast about his naked body, and the young men laid hold on him. And he left the linen cloth and fled from them naked. And they led Jesus away to the high priest. And with him were assembled all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes. And Peter followed him afar off, even unto the palace of the high priest. And he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. And the chief priests and all the council sought for witness against Jesus to put him to death, and found none. For many bare false witness against him, but their witness agreed not together. And there arose certain bear false witness against him, saying, We heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. But neither did their witness agree together. And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, Answerest thou nothing? What is it that which these witness against you? And he held his peace and answered nothing. Again the high priest asked him and said unto him, Art thou the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? And Jesus said, I am. And you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest rent his clothes and said, What need we any further witness? You have heard the blasphemy. What think ye? And they all condemned him to be guilty of death. And some began to spit on him and to cover his face and to buffet him and say to him, Prophesy. And the servants did strike him with the palms of their hands. And as Peter was beneath in the palace, that there cometh one of the maids of the high priest. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, And you was with Jesus of Nazareth. But he denied, saying, I know not, neither understand I what thou sayest. And he went out into the porch, and the cock crew. And a maid saw him again and began to say to them that stood by, This is one of them. And he denied it again. And a little after they stood by and said again to Peter, Surely thou art one of them, because thou you are a Galilean, and your speech agrees thereto. But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not this man of whom you speak. And the second time the cock crew, and Peter called to mind the words that Jesus said unto him, Before the cock crow twice, you shall deny me thrice. And when he had thought thereon, he wept. There's a whole bunch of stuff in here tonight. We should be able to deal with it without any problem, shouldn't we? Okay, back to verse 46. And they laid their hands on him and seized him. On who? Jesus, on the Christ. The religious has always got a religious spirit in someone, always got this violent thing. They always want to take, seize, do something vicious. Okay? It's not the nature of Christ to do those things, is it? And one of them that stood by drew a sword and smote, or literally struck a servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Now there's other passages that say the same thing about this reference. It's in Matthew 26:51, if anybody wants to know. It's also in Luke 22:51, and it's also in John 18:10. And one of them that stood by drew a sword and smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. And Jesus responded and said to them, not answered, he responded them to them, Are you come out as against a thief with swords and with staves to take me? Did he resist them? Why do you think they came out that way? Why did they come with violence in their heart? Absolutely right. Fear and insecurity creates that us and them mentality. See? It separates people. Fear. Does fear come from God? God has not given us a spirit of fear, but power, love, and a sound mind. You can always tell religious folk because there's fear in what they teach. Now, once in a while, they may say something that doesn't have any fear in it, but if you listen just a little bit longer, you'll catch it. They're preaching about some hell that you should be afraid of. They're preaching about some devil that's going to get you. Well, then why did he go to the cross? I think he took care of all that, didn't he? Well, then why are they trying to put something on you that's already been dealt with? See? Fear and insecurity. Okay? And he questioned him, said, why you come out and treat me like this? He said in verse 49, I was daily with you in the temple, that natural temple, teaching, and you took me not. Nevertheless, he said, the scriptures must be fulfilled. See, he wasn't upset. He was just questioning them. And see, Jesus, when he taught anybody, what did he do? He always made them think. Whenever they would do something, they'd come and ask him a question. They'd say, what do you think about this? He'd say, well, what do you think about that? He wanted you to think. And that's the one thing religion doesn't want you to do. They don't want you to think. Because if you do, you'll figure out they're not telling you the truth. If you use the mind that God gave you. So you intimidate people when you think. You really do. Because they've got it all wrapped up in a nice, neat little package, and you come along and make them get outside the box, and you mess their whole playground up. They don't know what to do then. But God, in this teaching, in this gospel teaching here through the Gospels, the start of this thing has been about a year and a half ago now, and the whole thing is about the mind of Christ. See? And if we don't think like Him, how could we have the mind of Christ? Because the mind is made up of one thing. What is it? Thought processes. See, I got to think. And if I don't think at all, guess what? I ain't got a mind. And most people who go to church really don't have a mind because they surely don't ever use one. If they did, they'd figure out all the stuff's been told to them is not true. I know it's not popular, but that's the truth. And I will tell the truth no matter what. Okay? Verse 50, it said, and they all forsook him or deserted him, running away. Okay? They all deserted him and ran away. That sounds like a church. As soon as they get any pressure on them, what do? They run away. Is that the answer to any problem? How do you deal with a problem? Face it head on. Don't run from anything. What good to do run from it? Face it head on and you can get it over with. Jesus had the same situation in his life that the Jews had on their life when they came out of Egypt. They had a testing. They had a desert experience to go through. It took them 40 years, didn't it? Jesus faced it head on. See, they went around in circles. He faced it head on and did it in 40 days. Which trip do you want? Depends on how much you're willing to pay. You willing to give up everything and do what he said? Be 40 days, maybe. Okay? Verse 51. Here begins a parable that most people don't see. Here's a parable. Doesn't say, and here lies a parable, but that doesn't mean it's not a parable. Look what it says. And there followed him a certain young man having a what? A linen cloth cast about his naked body, and the young men laid hold on him. You know who that young man was? You. Adam. This young man followed him, see? Right? And there followed him a certain young man. This is Adam. This is you. Having a linen cloth cast about his naked body. Who covered us with their righteousness? Remember, Adam was walking in the garden, and God said, where are you, Adam? He said, over here. He said, why'd you hide from me? Because I'm naked. Who told you he was naked? See, he was already covered with the righteousness of God, wasn't he? But he listened to somebody else. He listened to that thing in his head, didn't he? Listened to that serpent in his head. And he said, he had the righteousness of Christ, the linen cloth, cast upon his naked body, and the young man laid hold on him. Don't you know, I can tell from experience in my life, when I was that young man, and that righteousness was upon my body as a young Christian, following after who? Christ. You know, they come and grab me too. And you got some choice here. You can let them seize you and put you into the religious system, or you can flee even naked, because you can't run out from under his nakedness, his righteousness. It'll cover you anywhere. They can rip off your clothes, but they can't take your righteousness. Only in here do you let them do that, between your ears. If you let them have you, they can take it off of you, in your head. And it says in the 52nd verse, and he did what? He left the linen closet, the linen cloth, and fled from them naked. Literally it says he abandoned this linen cloth. So he abandoned the righteousness, and that's what most people do. When they are being fled after, they'll abandon it. How many people will stay there and take it? Say it that way. How many people will stay whenever the church system comes on? How many will say, hey, you can have what you're trying to put on me, I'm going. How many will do that? Not many. Not many, will he?
I will.
Yeah, I know. Some of us will. I've left too. But this is a parable that he's trying to show us. When the pressure's really been put on, how many people will stay? Not many. Not many can take the pressure. And he fled from them naked. That means just like Adam did. See, when the pressure came on, the temptations came on, he took off and hid from God, didn't he? That's the parable right there. It's the Garden of Eden again. Okay? You can see a whole lot of details in there if you want to sit and take time with it. I'm not going to try to expound that real greatly tonight. I'm just letting you see it. It is a parable, and it shows the Garden of Eden all over again. Okay? And they, verse 53, and they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes. Now notice, whenever they're going to persecute you, what they do. Have you ever been in a religious system and you violated their rules and regulations and you actually used your brain? That's what they'll do. They'll get the elders, the chief priests and the scribes and lawyers and all this stuff together, and they will try to assassinate you. This is just a parable. He's trying to show you, if it happened to me, what's it going to do to you? Same thing. This is just a this whole thing is a parable to teach us this is what's going to happen. Don't think it's strange when all these fiery trials come upon you. You've got to know this is what it's about. I'm telling you so you can be prepared and it won't be a surprise to you. See, most of the church out there, when anything comes against them, the devil's doing it. The devil's getting them, see? He's the one getting preached about in the churches. I mean, that's all they preach about in the churches out here is the devil. Well, he's already been defeated, then what am I dealing with a defeated foe for? I ain't got time to fool with that cat. I don't believe that cat exists except between our ears anyway. I just don't believe in it. And if there was a devil out there, and I've had people come to me and said, oh, you've made the devil mad. I really had a woman that said she was a prophetess from Florida. She came to me and said, you made the devil mad. Oh, yeah. She went and told my pastor on me. Said, he made the devil mad. But we kind of laughed that one off. But, you know, these people really believe this stuff. But they preach about him and give more power to him. If there was somebody with this kind of deity and power that the church has given to this creature they call a devil, okay, they might as well put him on a throne and give him a crown. Yeah, well, they have. In essence, they have. But if it was really somebody like this mean and this bad, then how come he don't squish me? How come he come and get me because I think he's a joke? I said, I think he's a dirty diaper, just something to be used and tossed aside. You know, he's like a dog on a leash. I mean, there's a lot of ways I've said it, and that's what it is. If there is something like that, it's still a tool of God. Means nothing to me. It's just a tool. You build a house, you need a hammer and a square and a level and some tools. When I get done, pitch them away. I don't need them no more when I get the house built. And that's all it would be if there was something like that. But I know it's between the ears. I don't care if anybody else believes it or not. I know what it is. It's right up there. Okay? So this is the way, and he's laying a pattern out to know that all these people will come against you. Now, if you take this, the high priest, that's the pastor, the chief priests, that's your elders and deacons and all that stuff. You know, the elders and the scribes, all that stuff. This is all the leadership of the church system. Who's going to come against you if you do something? The church world. Because, see, the world out here, what they call the bad people, they could care less what you say or do. They don't care what you do. It's only the church folk that get mad. You can go into Revelation, Gog and Magog, and look at the same pattern again. Gog and Magog will come against you as the sand of the seashore. Sand of the seashore speaks of one thing, covenants. Sand always speaks of covenants. And in covenants, sand is the second covenant, which also covers the first covenant. So he's telling you, Gog and Magog is the first two covenants that come against the righteous, the camp of the saints. The witness is all through the book, many, many times. Okay? Verse 54, we go on and say this, and Peter followed him afar off. Where was he at? Where was Peter at? He was a great distance away. Everybody wants to say, oh, Peter and James and John, oh, boy, they really had it. He said they were afar off. You reckon maybe they hadn't attained just yet? At the time of the crucifixion, them boys hadn't begun to grow yet. They hadn't even began to grow yet. They were just getting started. Until you realize that your crucifixion is already over, you better know that, or you're not going to grow either. Because until you come to the place where you know your crucifixion was finished 2,000 years ago, you're going to have a lot of growing to do. And you're going to follow him afar off until you come to a place where you realize, hey, that was my crucifixion. See what I'm saying? Remember in Matthew 5:18 what it says? And not one jot or tittle will pass from the law until this thing happens. Remember what it was? Go there. Matthew 5:18. Back up a little bit. Heaven and earth must pass. Concept. For verily I say to you, heaven and earth, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or tittle will not pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Until this concept of heaven and earth, see, way out there, see, that concept, just like he said right there, of Peter following him afar off. He's way off from Christ. Until that concept's out of there, of God that way and we're down here, the separation, you're still going to be under the law. There's the problem. It's our thinking again, see, it's right in here. Has God ever forsook humanity? Never from the beginning did he ever forsake humanity. It was all in our mind we thought that God was forsaking us because some religious person in the Pharisaical realm told him, God's not here anymore, he went away. In Genesis chapter 7, verse 2, God had his first fruit, Yahweh Elohim, create this man. Not create him, form him out of the dust of the earth. And he put his spirit in him. Right there where God entered humanity. Do you hear that? Did he ever leave? If he did, there wouldn't be nothing but a dust ball laying here. There'd be no life in it, would there? See, people don't understand how God began and they overlook that detail of the foundation. The foundation back there tells you everything you need to know about it. With the spirit in there to explain it to you. Okay, and Peter followed him afar off, even into the palace of the high priest. Now, all the way into what? The palace of the high priest. Do you think that's got to do with religion? You'll go all the way in to religion, to the highest realms of religion, but you won't recognize yourself and identify yourself with that Christ that's standing in there being crucified. Because he's being crucified in the realms of religion. They're going to hang him on the cross this weekend. Well, tomorrow, isn't it? Or today or tomorrow? Today or tomorrow, one to hang him on the cross. Tomorrow. See? And they're getting ready to hang him again in those higher realms of religion, all that religion. They're going to hang him again. And he's set where? In the midst of the servants of the high priest and warmed himself at the fire. He's getting comfortable. You can get in that religion, get comfortable. Do you think Jesus walked one moment of comfort on this earth? Then where do we get a right to get it? Where do we get the right that somebody can't be demanding upon your life? Where do we get the thought process that we don't have to be there for somebody else? Where do we get that thought process? Out of the pit. Out of the pit. What right do we have to say, I ain't got time for you today? Well, if we think that, something tells me that I'm in the realms of religion. Well, I'll take your call, but call me before 8 o'clock. See? After 8 o'clock, that's my time. Well, I didn't know I had any. The only time I got is when God lets me go do something on my own. All other times, who is it? Doesn't the book say that He bought you with a price? Well, then who are you? I belong to Him. If you're not your own, you've been bought with a price. If you tell that to most church-going folks, they're going to get mad at you because they don't want to give up the liberty they have in this easy believism the church has given them. Blame the devil out there. He's the bad cat. No, the bad cat's between your ears. It's you. Only devil you got to deal with is the one you formed up there between your ears. Okay? Verse 55, and the chief priest, or the high priest, and all the council, that's the Sanhedrin there, word should say Sanhedrin, sought for what? A witness or evidence? They looked for evidence against Jesus to put Him to death, and found what? You know what the language says in that word none? Absolutely none. It does. It says in the language. The word means absolutely none. Not just none. I mean, that'd be easier to say none. Well, that's close or something. But it says absolutely none in the language. Wonder why they didn't put that in there. It'd be too clear, wouldn't it? Verse 56. Because many bear false evidence. And literally it should say this. Many offered. The word bear should be offered. And many, because many offered false evidence, not witness, but evidence, against Him, but their evidence was not consistent. When it said agreed not together, it was not consistent, what the language says. So when you have two people come in telling you the story, and their stories are not consistent with each other, what would you say it was? How about a lie? It was false evidence, wasn't it? So it did not agree. You'd think if two liars were coming in to accomplish the same thing, they'd try to get their story straight, wouldn't you? They weren't even sharp enough to get their story straight. You'd have thought the religion would have had it together a little better, wouldn't you? They got all the formulas and doctrines. You'd have thought they'd got their liars lined up, got their ducks in a row. But they didn't. And there arose certain and offered, it says bear was offered, false evidence again against Him, saying, we heard Him say, I will destroy this temple. Okay? Now this word temple here, guess what it is? Naos. That's spiritual. They didn't catch that. The language will never teach you that. He said he would destroy this temple that is made with hands. And see, if that word was a temple made with hands, it'd be Hieron. This is Naos. He's talking spiritual, and it went over their heads. That is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. He wasn't talking about that stone building they were pointing out to Him. He was talking about His body. See? And if the writers had understood the language, what was being said, they'd have known right there. This is talking about the Holy of Holies. It's talking the very centermost part of this, that Naos temple is. But neither did their evidence agree together either. See? They couldn't get it together either. And you know what religion today can't do? You can't find two Baptists that agree. You can't find two Catholics to agree. You can't find two Apostolics. You can't find two Pentecostals, two Nazarenes. You can't find nobody to agree. You know why? Because there was no king in Israel. In their heart. They ain't got the king in Israel. See, we are Israel, spiritual. We're the heavenly Jerusalem. See? And guess what? It says in the last book of Judges, the very last verse, it says, in that day there was no king in Israel, and every man done what was right in his own eyes, his own sight. See? And that's what's going on today. And just because humanity has messed up everything they've touched, does that give us a right to throw aside what God says? But that's what they're doing, isn't it? See, the church world is butchering people. I mean, they made them religious priests. God knew when He put them in there to slaughter the beast, that's what they would do. They would take these beastly creatures and try to make them into a legitimate sacrifice. And they're still trying it today. They're taking people with a beastly nature that's never come to the knowledge of the Spirit of God, and they're trying to chop and whack and rape and steal and fillet them and skin them and everything else, and tell them, you're holy now. See? Ain't got nothing to do with it. Got nothing to do with it. And they're trying to do it by their religious traditions and doctrines. Won't work. They're trying to put somebody else in the place of the sacrifice that's already been made. They're all trying to create the sacrifice, but it's been done. He just showed you by witness that when those priests were putting the knife to all those beasts, that's what they're going to be doing to you too. And that's what they're doing today. They're slaughtering people. I wished I had a dollar in my hand for every person that I've heard that said, I am sick and tired of organized religion. I could be a millionaire if I just go around and pick up dollars from everybody that said that. I could be a millionaire. Just in this country alone, be a multimillionaire. People are sick of it. But see, somebody has got to step up, and that's our place. Somebody's got to step up and say, hey, yeah, you're right. They're all messed up over there. But why are you watching them for? That book says, put your eyes upon Christ. See? If you focus upon God, don't worry about what them people do. He'll deal with them, won't he? If we'll step up and look at that person, like Paul said, mark them who follow Christ and do what?
Follow
them. Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. See? Somebody's got to step up and do it. I ain't stepping down. I'm not stepping down. I don't care what anybody does. But if I look at what everybody else does, do you know I have no time to deal with what's in my mind? There's so much going on out here, like we was talking about earlier, all this stuff in the world. Man, it's a smokescreen. I don't care what the Republicans do or the Democrats do. I don't care who gets under whose desk and who gets on top of somebody else's desk or who blows up a bomb. That's none of my concern. That's religion. It's politics. It's worldly. And Paul said this in Thessalonians, a good soldier of Christ does not entangle himself with the affairs of the world. And if politics isn't worldly, there's no such thing as worldly. Myself personally and my wife, we quit voting years ago. I don't do nothing with it. They do what they want to with it. I haven't got enough time in my life to play with the world system and do God's work. Now that's me. Now, somebody else, that's their own business. Me, I can't do it. And that's just for me and my wife. We both decided on our own. We don't want no part of it. And you know what? We caught flack because we didn't vote. Well, you're not being patriotic. This country said you can make your own choice in that, didn't they? Well, we chose not to do it. See? Free country. I can do what I want. I choose not to do that. In worldly matters, I choose not to be involved. Okay? Where am I at? 59 or 60? And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these testify against you? He said, won't you put up an argument? How about trying to justify yourself? Remember what I've said many times here? God spoke it to me. Justifying is just a lying. Why would he try to justify his life? Would they have understood him? He could have said, my father sent me. That's basically what he did. And he said, oh, blasphemy. What more need have we got of any witness? We've got him now with his own words. That isn't what he said. Is it? I'll show you something here in a second. Verse 61. But he held his peace, or he kept silent, and answered nothing. And again the high priest asked him and said unto him, art thou the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? Now the man said, are you? And what did he say? And Jesus said, I am, and you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. What happened? They got mad. You know, people don't like for you to assume your position. If you assume your position in Christ, you know what you just did to them? In their eyes, you just elevated yourself. Well, see, Jesus said, you can't put yourself up there anyway. Because if you exalt yourself, I will abase you myself. And if you abase yourself, I will exalt you. And nobody will take that away from you. And nobody can take that away from you. So as soon as he sets you up, you're set. It's not, well, if you're real good, you can be my son. If you're good today, and well, no, you disobeyed me, so now you're not my son today. It don't work that way. I think the book says that the blood of Emmanuel flows through our veins. Emmanuel means God with us. God in us. It's God in us. So if it's his blood flowing through my veins, can they pump the blood out of my veins? Okay. It's a relationship. See, it's not just fellowship. It's a relationship. Once the blood's been set, there's no change in that stuff. He's our Father. How could that ever be changed? We could die. Would that change the fact that he was my Father? Still my Father. I'm still his son. So they can't change that. But see, he did something here. In the very face of religion, you're going to have to be able to stand and do this very same thing. This is not in here for a history book just to tell you what happened to him. This is for you to learn how to deal with the people that's going to come against you. Same thing. And when they ask you, are you the Christ? What are you going to say? I am. He's telling you the pattern. How do you answer these religious folk? I've had them want to pull guns on me, punch me out, spit on me, and everything else. I don't care. I'm not going to deny who I am. I'll not deny my heritage. God is my Father. Jesus is my older brother. See? And see, me and him like that. We're just right together. He's no better than me, and I'm no better than him. See, some people think that's blasphemy. But guess what? How many of you in here has got an older brother? Okay, I'm talking about the natural now.
No, I don't.
Well, if you got no family, no, she older than you?
Uh-huh.
Is she any better than you because she's older than
no.
you? That's what I'm trying to make a point of. You're out of the same mother and father. What difference does it make? You're equal. You're the same daughter. That's all. You're the same. There's no difference. And the book says he's not a respecter of persons. Okay. Jesus was the first, it says, the firstborn of many sons. Does that make him any better than anybody else? No, he was just the one he chose to walk it out first. And you know what? The one walking it out first is no different from you in this respect. You got to do the same thing. I'm not talking about doing all these things that he did, these miracles. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about standing up and proclaiming who you are. Somebody's got to do it. Why should I want to give that privilege to someone else? No, man, if he give them to me, I'm carrying it. You got to hear it yourself and know that God's talking to you. And he said, I am, and you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the what? What's the clouds? First fruit, that's us. We're encompassed about so great a cloud of witnesses. It's the overcomers. It's the first fruit. So he's saying, you're going to see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of the Father and coming in the clouds or the first fruit of the spirit realm. The first fruit of the spirit. Right? And Jesus was, it says, the first fruit of all creation. Okay? Now, look at something here. You shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power. When it says the Son of Man, who is that? Who's the Son of Man? We are. It's right here. See? Son of man, son of God, what's the difference? We're the same. Jesus called himself both. We are too. He said, but you'll see him coming. But there's something else here. He said, you'll see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand. Notice the position. Sitting.
At rest.
Not laboring any longer. And see, when you see the sons of God, you know what you're going to see? Someone at peace. Sitting, resting, laboring, and have already entered into his rest. They've labored to enter into his rest. So they're not laboring like the church system has tried to make you do. Do, 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 do. Do, do is good. It's good stuff for the garden out there, for the ground, but it's no good for the temple. It won't help us a bit. Do, do's fertilizer. So they want you to be active and busy, but he's saying you're going to see the Son of Man sitting in a comfortable, relaxed position, see? On the right hand of power, that's full power and authority of God, and coming in the first fruit of the spirit realm. And then the high priest rent his clothes and said, "What need we any further witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think?" Well, see, the problem here is it isn't what you think. What did God say? See, they're trying to go back to everyone's carnal thinking, their carnal understanding. What do you think? And they all condemned him to be guilty of death. Well, you know what? It's no different today. I had a man stand right in this very room and want to punch me out right by that door back here because I said I'm a son of God with power of resurrection life in me. Does the book say we have? Made him mad just as mad as it did these people right here. There's all kinds of people that's not going to let you proclaim who you are. And the only reason they stop you from proclaiming that is because they don't want you to go above them. That's all. They're trying to keep you down in the dirt. And didn't it say in Revelation that the tail drew a third part of the stars and did cast them to the earth? Them stars are the seed of Abraham. And that tail that cast them down, if you read Isaiah 9:15, is the false prophets that teach and tell lies. They're the tail. And that's the things out here right now. That false prophet, we're not looking at people. Okay? When we say false prophet, we're not talking about an individual preacher out here preaching, although he may be preaching false doctrine. I'm not talking about that individual man. I'm talking about the false prophet being the mind within that person. There's the false prophet in his head. Not the man, but what's going on in his head, his thought process. That's what we have to understand. And that's the only way you can separate this and still love the man, even if he's a false preacher, preaching false doctrine. Because it's not him, it's that false doctrine in him, that false preacher in him that's preaching, not the Christ. The wrong man's a preaching. Okay? And they all condemned him to be guilty of death. Now tell me what he did. Just because he says he's the Son of Man, he's guilty of death. Doesn't this book say, we know this, when he appears, we will be just like he is. Well, if I'm just like him, who am I? I'm him. See, we'll be just as he is. And that's exactly what he said. And they want to kill him. And you know, when you say that today, you'll hear the same thing. I hear people ask me, who do you think you are comparing yourself to Christ? Or comparing yourself to Jesus? I say, well, who am I supposed to compare myself to? I'm supposed to compare myself to him. It says not to judge myself with another man. What somebody else does or does not do. I'm not supposed to compare myself to, well, Bob doesn't do very good, so I'm real good. Steve, you do real good. That makes me feel bad. What's that got to do with anything? I'm supposed to compare myself with Christ. Nothing else. And then you know what? I know I'll always look at that and realize, like the church realm tells, you'll always fall short. You always fall short. Okay, I hear you, serpent. Why would I fall short when I look and see a reflection of myself? Hello? I look in Christ and who should I see? I should see my life hid in Him. And Paul say, my life is hid in Christ? Come on. See, you're not supposed to see yourself. My life is hid in Christ. I have to see Christ when I look in the mirror. If you can't see Christ, how do you expect somebody else to? Hello? See, you've got to look at this thing just like God says, not what you see with your natural eye. What's that got to do with anything? That's a temporal thing. Has nothing to do with eternal things. It's an eternal truth. I can see each one of you sitting in this room right now. But that's not an eternal truth. That's a temporal truth. The eternal truth is we're seated in the heavens. See? And that ain't up in the sky. That's seated in the Spirit with Christ. That's what God says in His Word. Is that truth or not? It's truth, and I got to believe it. I don't care what anybody thinks. People say, well, I don't see you up there. Well, you're looking the wrong place. You're looking with the wrong kind of eyes. And see, we don't have to wear robes and say, oh, God. See, we don't have to do things like that to be spiritual. I read something tonight. Let me see if I can find it. I think I got it with me. I thought this was hilarious. I'm going to say it in just a minute if I can get to it. Nope, that's not it. Let me see this one. Yeah. I want to read you something about worrying. I meant to do this earlier. I'm going to do it and put it on tape. I'll let everybody else hear it. It's good. The power of worrying. This is kind of like a little story to start with, and then it goes into something else. It's good. Death was walking toward a city one morning, and a man asked him, "What are you going to do?" "I'm going to take 100 people," Death replied. "That's horrible," the man said. "That's the way it is," Death said. "Well, we'll see about that," said the man, as he hurried to warn everybody he could about Death's plan. As evening fell, he met Death again. And the man said to him, "You told me you were going to take 100 people." And the man said, "Why did 1,000 people die?" He said, "I kept my word," Death responded. "I only took 100 people. Worry took the other 900. And this is what the mental health system says today. This interesting tale portrays so well what the National Mental Health Committee reported a few years ago. Half of the people in America's hospital beds are constant worriers. Mental distress can lead to migraine headaches, arthritis, heart trouble, cystitis, colitis, backaches, ulcers, depression, digestive disorders, and yes, even death. Add to that list the mental fatigue of nights without sleep and days without peace, and then we get a glimpse of the havoc worry plays in destroying the quality and quantity of our lives. Release the regrets of yesterday, refuse the fears of tomorrow, and receive instead the peace of today. Yes, my friend, simply let go and let God live this and be eternally blessed. Let it go. We're fighting things that don't make no sense. There's a peace to be had. I was going to read that earlier and it just popped back in, so I guess I'm supposed to read it here. Okay? Where did I leave off in the verse? 63? Oh, I did 63. Okay, we're going to 64. He said, "You have heard the blasphemy," verse 64. "What think you?" And they all condemned him to be guilty of death. And some began to spit on him and to cover his face and to buffet. To buff him. That word buffet him means they beat him with their fists, is what the language says. They beat him with their fists and said to him, "Prophesy." And the servants did strike him with the palms of their hands. And as Peter was beneath in the palace, there cometh one of the maids of the high priest. Okay? And as Peter was beneath, there came one of the maids of the high priest. Who would be the maid of the high priest? Come on, think. Who would be the maid of the high priest? Who's the high priest represent? Not God. Man's God. Religion. And who do you think his maid would be? The harlot. The soul. The woman. Okay, we can take us internal. And as we was talking earlier, Steve and I was talking earlier, every human on the face of the earth has a desire to worship something. In Deuteronomy 7, verse 1 and 2, I believe it is, God said this, "There are seven nations stronger and mightier than you are." And he said the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Hittites, all these different ites. Well, you know what the one Jebusite is? You know what the Jebusite is? Jebus was the original name of Jerusalem. And if you look in the language, it says, the original inhabitants of Jebus, which is Jerusalem, were called Jebusites. And what does religion, what does that mean to us in religion? What does the capital Jerusalem mean to us? Religion. See, so there are religious spirits that every one of us have within us. And we have to learn to overcome that religious spirit and worship God in spirit and truth. That's all. Everybody's got to fight through this thing. Nobody gets a free pass. We all got to go through it. So this maid here represents my soulish realm, or you could say the harlot, which is the false priest woman, okay? Adam's woman, how's that? And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, "And you also was with Jesus of Nazareth." Right? Does anybody know what Nazareth means? The guarded one. Who was the guarded one? Everybody said, "Well, if he was guarded, how come he died?" He was protected till it was his time. Didn't Jesus tell him, "It's not yet my time"? What have I to do with you? It's not yet my time. Religion's always pointing a finger and accusing, aren't they? And he denied it again. And a little after, they that stood by him by said again to Peter, "Surely you are one of them, because you are a what?" What does Galilee mean? The heathen. You're one of them heathen people. See, they didn't recognize him. He was a fisherman. They didn't recognize him as being a Jew, did they? He was a heathen man to them, as far as they was concerned. Wasn't very smooth. You know, God didn't call very many smooth people. You want them with robes, he said, you'd have to go to a king's palace. You come out to see a prophet, you're going to find something besides that. You're not going to find all the robes. That's right. "And your speech agrees." The way you talk, you don't talk like one of them smooth, silver-tongued devils that come out of the seminary or cemetery or something like that. See? Talk like a hillbilly. Well, that's what I am. See, I can talk like a hillbilly. That's what I am. And we shouldn't try to put on airs for anybody. And somebody wants to identify me and said, "You sound like a hillbilly." That's okay. That's fine. I don't care. I live in a country that they call this a hillbilly country. That's okay. If you was in Texas, they'd call you something else down there, a Bubba or something. I don't know. They got names for them all over. So we don't care about those names, but we're going to be who we are. The sons of God should be who they are. We shouldn't have to worry about impressing somebody and trying to change our speech and alter our speech. I've got nothing to be ashamed of the way I pronounce the words. If somebody can't understand me, I do the best I can to communicate, and if they can't understand it, there's nothing I can do about it. Okay. Verse 71. "But he began to curse and to swear, saying, 'I know not this man of whom you speak.'" He said this, and this is one verse that's so beautiful. "Even if you deny him, he cannot deny himself." See? He's already identified himself as being part of us. Or why would he say, "Even if you deny him, he cannot deny himself"? You're part of him. You're part of the family. I know the anti-reconciliationists don't like that, but that's okay. He already identified himself with me. Then what they think, does it make a difference? Doesn't make any difference to me or God. Shouldn't to you either. Verse 72. "And the second time the cock crowed, and Peter called to mind," or literally it says he remembered, the words that Jesus spoke to him, "Before the cock crowed twice, you shall deny me thrice. And when he thought," the word thereon isn't even in there. "When he thought," he what? You know what the language said? He wailed aloud. He wailed aloud. That means he realized that he had really blew it. Now, you think he went to hell? No, I'd say he was sitting in it right when he did it. The condemnation and guilt was eating him up. But see, Jesus spoke something to him a long time before this. It's in the book of Luke. We'll get to it later. He said this. He said, "Peter, Satan has desired to sift you as wheat, but I prayed for you." little relationship there. He's hooked himself with him because I prayed for you. Do you think he knew he was going to get what he asked for? He said, "I prayed for you, brother. And when you're converted," what's that saying? He wasn't.
Followed the Lord 3 years, and he
That's what he said. He said, when you are converted, strengthen my brethren. It's kind of like feed my sheep, my lambs. Oh, God's got a sense of humor. Oh, I love it. But when you think on something, when you deny God, if you're truly, and see, Peter's heart was right. His mouth just overloaded him. He was a sanguine. Sanguines are good about speaking swiftly and hearing slowly. And that's what Peter did all the time. But when he did it, see, his heart was not malicious. There was no malice in his heart. He said things just out of a slippery tongue. He didn't really mean what he said, and he got himself in trouble. And all God was doing in this, you're going to deny me before the cock crows twice? He's saying, son, you don't even know your own heart. You know how many people say, I love God with all my heart, until there's a little pebble in the road and they have to step on it. Oh, that's too big a mountain for me to go over. Yep. They can't handle the pressure. And that's all he's trying to say. Peter, you don't know your heart. How many of you think you know your heart? Before you can get out of here, something will go on. Best thing to do is say, don't worry about that. The main thing is deal whatever comes up. He's trying to show you, look at your heart, Peter. That's the issue of life. Out of your heart is the issue of life. Isn't that what he's taught all the way through? Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. He said, protect your heart, for out of it's the issues of life. I think that's in Proverbs. It says, out of the heart is the issues of life. See, we got to stay here and understand something. If we don't understand our own heart, then we should sit down and listen. Everybody's in a hurry to go someplace and do something. That's why he's trying to tell Peter, slow down, son. You don't even know your own heart. See, we think we know our heart. You know why we think we know our heart? Someone tell me why we think we know it. Why do we think we know it? The heart of man is desperately wicked and evil above all things. See? And that thing's going to lie to you. I can't trust what my head tells me. The only thing I can believe is what the Spirit of God speaks in my heart that lines up with this book over here I'm teaching out of. When that lines up, then I can say, what I heard from God is exactly what that book said. It's a witness. It's solid. It's etched in there now. See, but when I listen to my mind, and that's what I said a while ago, when there's no king in Israel, we are Israel. See? No king in Israel. Every man does what's right in his own eyes. And that's what the church world's done. They went out and told everybody, just do whatever you want to do. It don't make no difference. God don't care. That's what they say. See, this isn't about being saved. It's about being obedient. And if Jesus, if the words Paul penned about Jesus was right, he said, learned he obedience through the things he suffered. Well, why do you say he learned it? Well, he was perfect. He had everything figured out. Well, why do you say he learned obedience? Something hadn't been figured out yet. And see, we're not talking about the Christ that was within this man. We're talking about the man coming into obedience. The Christ in there was already in perfection, but the man wasn't there yet. And that's the only thing in you. Everybody says, it don't make no difference what this flesh does. Yeah, it does. Sure it does. Well, then what's that book written about then if it's not? See? This flesh has to come into obedience. I don't have to beat it in obedience. Only thing I have to do is one thing. Bob, you know what it is? Romans 12, 1 and 2. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present yourself a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your unreasonable service. Reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world or this age, but be this age of thinking, the way they think in this age, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. Hello. If I renew my mind, my body don't have a choice. My body does what my mind tells it to do. There's nothing that goes through your body that your brain isn't functioning in. Whether it's conscious or subconscious or unconscious, your body does things, but your brain tells it what to do. And if my mind has been renewed in Christ, guess what? I can't do them things. Not that I say, I don't want to do them, or they're wrong and I might get in trouble, or the devil might get me, or somebody might pray me into hell or something. See, it's none of that stuff. If you're the Son of God, you don't have those things in you. It said in John, 1 John, they that are born of God cannot sin. Well, do I believe that? See, how much do I believe that? I believe with all my heart. I don't believe I can sin no more. They say, oh, I seen you. Oh, no, you ain't seen me. You ain't seen me. You ain't even seen my flesh do it. I ain't saying I'm above nobody. I'm just saying I have the mind of Christ. And I'm free in that. I have no condemnation. I have no guilt. If I make a mistake in something, guess what? I have an advocate with the Father. I got a mouthpiece. I don't have to worry about it, do I? See? I can lay down and sleep at night and say, oh, I didn't pray and ask God to forgive me. I might die before I get up in the morning. I might go to hell. Oh, hogwash. It's garbage. And if we don't come out of this thinking process that God is mad at us and realize that I've got to believe what He said. I've got to believe it. It's not just say, well, okay, I believe it. Because when you say you believe it, now comes the test. You're going to be tested in it. I think Bob said something here a couple weeks ago. He said, man, I got it made. He said, seems like everybody got problems with me. He comes in a week later and said, I should have kept my mouth shut. Didn't you? See? I mean, nobody's exempt in this thing. See? We're going to learn obedience through the things we suffer. And these things in our life is not some devil doing it to us. God has set up a perfectly spiritual walk for you, and you're going to walk through a lot of hell in this life. But this very, what do I call it, custom-made walk, just for you. I mean, that means He knows something about you, and He's interested in you. He made a walk for you, and He knew exactly the course you've got to take to bring you back to Him. That shows He's got a lot of attention in me. He's looking at me. He's paying attention in me, that He loves me so much He's going to bring me right back to where I belong, in Him. I'm having fun.